What is the relationship between ethnicity and discipleship? Hello, I'm Dave Thomas, the Dean of the School of Theology. With me today are two colleagues and friends, Larry Viverka, a professor of pastoral care, and Daryl Bigger, an individual who helps in the teaching of practical theology here at Walla Walla University. And this is The Good Word, our dialogue on subjects that emerge from Scripture. And today we are going to be talking about ethnicity and discipleship. Our lesson this whole quarter is on discipleship, and for our discussion is the question of ethnicity. It is interesting to me that if you look in the Gospels and in the Bible, there is evidence of exclusivism, that the people of Jesus' day somehow believed that due to promises made to their ancestors in the past, that they were the only ones who were destined for the promised land. Of course, other people were invited to join, but the whole context of this was governed by them. And yet in the Gospels, and then into the book of Acts, as we read about the expansion of Christianity, we discover that it very quickly goes beyond just Jerusalem and the people who lived in Jerusalem. It goes, Jesus himself had incidents where he deliberately went into Gentile countries and where he spoke with Gentiles. And what do we make of the question of ethnicity and discipleship? Is there any general observation that either one of you would like to make? How are gender and how are ethnicity and discipleship linked?
Doesn't it seem that that the intention of what brought about the exclusive, withdrawn nature of New Testament Judaism was not well founded? That is to say, weren't they wanting to preserve themselves as the holy people who were set aside by God for God's purpose? Mm-hmm. And that's a very good motive. And I wonder if that doesn't apply pretty well to all kinds of subdivisions of human beings today, even. It's a wish to maintain some valued aspect of our particular perspective on life or our historical experiences, and we want to maintain those, so we exclude other people from us and withdraw from others.
You see, you triggered something in my mind where it seems like something that is given to us as a gift, in a sense, becomes the instrument by which we declare exclusivity.
Oh, isn't that often the case?
And how many groups down through history have done that?
Yes.
What do you make of Jesus' efforts to go beyond the borders of Jerusalem?
You were getting ready to say something too, Larry.
Well, my speech was similar to yours, Daryl. That what motivated the people who came back from the exile was a corrective, not to repeat history in which their efforts to blend with surrounding cultures had gotten them, shipped to Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
And they simply didn't want to repeat that history. So part of that is to draw very clear boundaries between themselves and other cultures or religions, which then led to this exclusivity. I think it was motivated in the right direction in that sense, but became a means of distorted exclusivism and took on a kind of it just went sour, went bad.
You see, I don't want to be hard on them, because as I look at human history, how many religious groups have done that? They declare themselves to be the exclusive purveyors or guardians of whatever God is doing on planet Earth, and everybody else is excluded. And doesn't it spring from the same motivation?
And we do it in all kinds of ways, even as subgroups of the same ethnic and national organizations now. Political parties, ideologies within the same denominational group. We're terrible at human beings at excluding other people.
Mm-hmm. And yet we see that Jesus does not follow the status quo rules of his time mm-hmm. when it comes to ethnicity. We see him going to Phoenicia, down to Tyre and Sidon. We see him talking to Gentiles. We have the incident of him in the temple when some Gentiles come wanting to meet with him. What kind of statement do you think is being made here?
Well, for one thing, he is being very clear that he is not bound by these rules that somehow diminish and diminish people, that he's uplifting people and declaring that people are of value in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's clearly a part of his message. And he goes, I mean, in some respects, he goes out of his way to make his point. I mean, with his illustrations, his personal travel style was to go up through Samaria, you know, instead of going down the Jordan quarter to go around Samaria. He goes right up through when he wants to head up to the hill country mm-hmm. of Nazareth or Cana.
And his Good Samaritan parable is an in-your-face confrontation on this issue.
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems like very early on Jesus is making statements that the gospel is not limited ethnically.
Mm-hmm.
That, and you know, then we go to the book of Acts, and you begin to see how there are two very intriguing stories there. I think the first one about in Acts 10 with Peter being sent to Cornelius, and of course that didn't play so well with some of the other disciples. In fact, it didn't play that well with Peter.
That's for sure.
You know, and he comes back with this incredulous frame of mind. He's saying that. Basically, I mean, I saw God at work. What am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
So
it's very similar to his response about the fishing miracle when he first responded as a disciple.
Yeah,
that he's overwhelmed by what he sees and he can't deny it anymore.
I like the way you put that. When you get overwhelmed by what you've seen, it's pretty hard to deny it.
Yes.
And then one that really fascinates me and makes me chuckle quite a bit is the whole story of the church at Antioch, which you find in Acts chapter 11, where, the people of Jerusalem, the Christians in Jerusalem, seem to have had the idea that they were the governors of the gospel and that they were going to preside over what happened with it. And then they begin to get reports that there's a believing community emerging in Antioch. And so they send the good man Barnabas, and he's one of my favorite people in the Bible. I think he's a wonderful man and a courageous man. And they send him, you know, Barnabas, you can go easily between the different cultures. You go up there to Antioch, and Barnabas makes the discovery that most of the believing community is made up of Gentiles. And he brings back the shocking news. The news to Barnabas, I think, was very pleasing because the Bible says very quickly that he set up residence in Antioch, you know. But what do you think of those?
Well, I think the Jewish center for the Christian church in Jerusalem clearly had the words of Jesus ringing in their heads as well, and that is that the gospel was first to go there. But a lot of times they were selective listeners. I mean, there's no timelines outlined by Jesus as to when those shifts would take place in that sort of three-tier mission that he laid out for them. And so they're thinking that they're the center of the Christian church and have some exclusive rights to control and where the gospel is spread. So I understand their thinking, but at the same time, the good news is that God moves things ahead sometimes in spite of us when it's time.
You know, I'm intrigued here also by the fact that as soon as a people group or a believing group describes the parameters of appropriate activity for God, he seems to step outside of that and start mm-hmm. working on the outside. And there are so many examples in history. What do we say to those who want to limit God to certain parameters, saying that, well, if you know, and it's a great danger to human beings, because if you have declared the box in which God must work, you are unlikely to recognize, or it's going to come as a pretty big shock to you, that he's now working outside of that. You know, and I see that in Antioch. I see that I suppose the same could be said of more modern times. I wonder if there have been ethnic groups, as the great missionary movements began to burgeon a couple hundred years ago, if there were certain ethnic groups. Well, prior to that, there was a belief that those certain ethnic groups were not subject to the gospel. Mm.
It makes it very difficult for institutions to maintain themselves when the boundaries aren't clear.
Yeah.
Institutions exist to preserve themselves. When the edges are eroding, they lose a sense of identity.
Mm. Yeah, it amazes me how often God has gone outside of the expectations of people in order to achieve. Because, you know, if we become too exclusivistic, we become moribund. We can't move anymore. We spend our time making sure that nothing that God has said or done ever gets changed, you know. So. What do we conclude about ethnicity in the gospel? Are there any limitations that come to us? Are there any mandates that you can think of that we ought to be aware of in terms of ethnicity in the gospel?
Well, the gospel commission is a mandate.
In other words, go everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You have to take that seriously.
Yeah.
And it means more than just geography.
Yes.
Well, what do you mean by that, Dylan?
That it isn't just the, when we talk about going to the whole world, we're talking about the people the whole world,
yeah.
Not just the territory itself.
Yeah. And it is interesting that Great Commission is quite expansive. It's descriptive. Every nation, kindred, tongue, and people. So, I mean, you're even getting down to clans, it seems like. I'm intrigued by the fact that for 1,500 years or more, Europe was the bastion of Christianity, Europe is fairly monolithic in one way. Europeans, although there are big differences in European cultures, but today the ground zero for Christianity has shifted. It's shifted south. It's gone down below the equator, in fact, into Africa and the South America and so forth, and it seems to me that now those of us who have come from cultures that have a long history with Christianity are about ready to learn some lessons from individuals who were at one time were perceived to be outside the bounds of Christianity. They now predominate, and I hope that we are willing to learn lessons with humility. I noticed a commentary now has been written by African theologians, and I think one of these days I'm going to buy that. And have a look at it. But anyway.
Another touchstone is Galatians, which you referred to last week.
Oh, okay.
God is no respecter of all these subgroups.
Yeah. Well, thanks for your involvement here. I appreciate your comment on the subject. And our thanks to our engineer, John Campbell. And also our thanks to our audience for listening. For the Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.